It is Your Money. Welcome to the show. I'm Susie Jones. We've got a big show lined up for you, so we'll get right to it. Again, we have with us on the line Bruce Helmer, the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group and financial advisor, and Peg Webb, senior financial advisor at Wealth Enhancement Group, and a special guest. We'll have Peg introduce our guest as we talk about tips for avoiding tax-related cyber crime. It is a big topic for this time of year. Bruce, Peg, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Susie. Good morning, Bruce.
Thank you for that great introduction, Susie Jones. Hello, Peg Webb. And I'll actually introduce our guest today. So, Susie, as you mentioned, this is the time of year now where a lot of people are focusing in, zoning in on doing their tax preparation for 2024 to try to get it done by April 15th. And it's also, unfortunately, in today's world, the time of year where tax filing scams and fraudsters are increasingly targeting people, especially high net worth people. And a lot of our tax filing, a lot of the things we do now, it's not like it was, Peg, when you and I were young, when we'd get out that pencil and fill out the 1040. Almost everything is electronic now, and that means, though, that we have to go to greater lengths to protect that information. So we're very fortunate to have with us today one of the highly recognized people in the world in this topic. We're thrilled to have Bryce Austin with us. Bryce is the CEO of DCE Strategy. Again, like I mentioned, he's a recognized leader in this industry. He's been a chief information officer and chief information security officer for a long time. He used to do those positions at Wells Fargo. He was also a senior group manager at Target Corporation. He also has a designation called Certified Information Security Manager. And Bryce, like our industry, you have a lot of acronyms, the CISM, the CIO, the CISO, the financial services industry is good on acronyms also. And last thing before we get Bryce talking here, Bryce, we should mention your book. Bryce also has a best-selling book out about this topic. The book is called Secure Enough, 20 Questions on Cybersecurity for Business Owners and Executives. You can get that at Barnes & Noble or Amazon or wherever you get your e-reading material. Bryce, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today on this topic that probably potentially impacts everybody listening. Bryce?
Thank you so much, Bruce. I appreciate the introduction. Indeed, it does. Anyone that files taxes in this country could fall victim to cyber criminals trying to steal your tax return or other information. It's not a new issue, but it exploded on the scene back in 2014 when, for better or worse, the IRS put up a new feature on their website that would let you download previous year's tax returns, which is a nice feature if you're trying to fill out this year, but they didn't ask you to sign up with a username or a password. They asked you to answer questions like, what city were you born in? What high school did you go to? What bank account do you have? That kind of thing. Well, cyber criminals were able to guess those, and they started downloading former people's former year's tax returns to the tune of hundreds of thousands, and then they resubmitted them with hefty refunds for the year in question. They took that money and put it in their bank accounts as opposed to yours, and then hired money mules to get it out of the country. It's been an interesting set of affairs the last decade trying to stay in front of these cyber criminals.
Well, we absolutely love the ease of finding information, researching things, but the most common tax scams that I'm seeing is that, just like you mentioned, people, like we're trusting people, right? And we're going in there and just saying, oh, they need this, they need that. What are some of the most common tax scams?
Goodness, there are so many. I just mentioned people are trying to register as you at irs.gov and submitting a tax return into their account that has your refund in it. That one's been around for a long time. There are some new ones popping up. There are people that are calling folks pretending to be from the IRS. And they are asking questions like, is your social security number XYZ? And were you born in this town? Because they have the same information, but it makes them sound more official. And then they claim that you're in trouble with the IRS, and unless you make a payment today, that the cops are going to come after you. And, of course, the whole thing's a scam. They have nothing to do with the IRS. But I've had clients run into that one with some frequency. The same thing is true online. People will get emails with this sort of information. We've also had some people that are pretending to be tax preparers that really aren't. And their whole business model is to steal as much of your personal information as they can and either file a fraudulent tax return that pretends to be you or to sell that information to others.
That actually seems to be a new one to me, where now all of a sudden we've got people that are actually saying they're tax preparers.
If only we could get these people to use their power for the bright side of the force. Regrettably, cyber criminals operate with an idea as to how they can poke holes in a given system. And it doesn't matter if the system is electronic or paper and pencil or based on humans or based on technology. They try to think of a way to convince someone to do something that is in the criminal's financial best interest. And it occurred to someone that tax preparers get a lot of sensitive information. That information is valuable on the dark web, and it can be used to file a fraudulent tax returns. So why not pretend to be an accountant and hawk your services at a greatly discounted rate? And instead of actually filing their taxes, they file a fraudulent one for them, and you never hear from them again.
Bruce?
Oh, sorry, Peg. Hey, Bryce. And again, listeners, if you joined us late, we're talking about tax-related cybercrime. Bryce, it occurs to me that this can expand way beyond just information in terms of tax prep season. Once they have once the bad guys have our personal data, there's any number of other ways that they can get money out of us illegally. And I think maybe listeners don't fully understand just how prevalent this is today. Correct me if I'm wrong, Bryce, but there's people, you know, that spend, this is their job. They're criminals, and they spend all their waking hours trying to hack, trying to infiltrate systems, trying to fish and scam, and this is all they do. And it's way more prevalent than people realize, and we all have a potential vulnerability to this. You want to expand on going beyond just the tax season and how dangerous and how vulnerable we all might be?
Absolutely. We're entering a period which most of our lives are online in some form or fashion. And I'm a Gen X, so I grew up where the internet was a neat new toy when I was a kid, but it did not occur to me that I would be doing things like online banking or investments. Or that sort of thing in an electronic format. And the thought that sensitive data like our social security numbers and the address we grew up and our phone numbers from childhood could be used against us wasn't really a thought. As a matter of fact, Bruce, I was going through some old things weeks ago and found one of my high school report cards from Rockford, Illinois. My social security number is printed on the report card. And that's how it was in the 90s. We didn't think that was a problem. Well, the world has changed a lot. I met a gentleman that used to run physical security at the Mall of America. His name was Michael Rosen, and he came out of Israeli Special Forces and did the same sort of work in Israel for malls and what have you. And if they ran a drill there, putting backpacks that looked like they could have some sort of explosive device in them around a mall, well, if they put out four of them in a day, within an hour, two of them would typically be called into their version of 911. One of them would be called in by the end of the day, and a fourth one would be missed. Michael did the exact same thing at the Mall of America. Within an hour, two of them were stolen. One of them got called into campus security, and the fourth one was missed. We're not used to assuming malicious intent in this country, Bruce. And I think that's the heart of the problem. The vast majority of this cybercrime does come from overseas, and That's because it's easy. We've taken the world and shrunk it to the head of a pin online. It doesn't matter what country you're in, what geography you have, what your police force does and doesn't enforce, what sort of cultural norms you're around. Anyone can try to go after anyone else. And with America being a first world country, we are a very rich target for these sorts of people. So we're dealing with issues on many fronts. Sometimes it's small. My kids go up against scams with their online games, trying to steal things like V-Bucks and Fortnite and what have you. And people do it by trying to guess passwords. People do it by chatting them and saying, let's share an account. Can you tell me what your password is? And I spend a lot of time trying to educate my kids that these people are not your friends. You shouldn't assume positive intent. But then if we get into the grown-up world, there are two areas where, regrettably, there's a whole lot of business that comes into my company because people do two things that cause them to fall victim to cybercrime. One is they use the same password everywhere. Now, I've got hundreds of passwords in my life. There isn't any way to keep individual passwords straight for hundreds of different accounts. The human brain just can't do that. The trouble is, if you use the same password everywhere, well, some institutions you expect to have a pretty high level of security. Your bank, your investment areas, hopefully your healthcare system, although their track record has been very dubious. But if you have a favorite hobby, and you are part of a website that hobby embraces, something like ilovepuppies.com, I checked, that one doesn't exist, so no one's going to get mad at me for saying it. But you wouldn't expect a website like ilovepuppies.com to have the same level of security to keep your password safe as a major bank or a major healthcare institution. But if you use the same password at both places, well, then ilovepuppies.com gets hacked, and then a bad guy uses the email address that you signed up at ilovepuppies.com and that password in other areas. And that's a way for them to get into your accounts, and they can use it for wire fraud transfer. It's a problem. The second thing that I'm seeing is that a username and password simply isn't enough anymore. I'm sure most of our listeners have run into areas where they're being forced to type in their mobile phone number into a bank account website or what have you, and then that bank account will send them a six-digit code to their phone. That's called MFA, or multi-factor authentication. And what it's saying is a username and password gets you partway there, but it won't get you into your account. You need to have your phone. So there are three ways to say that you are who you claim to be. One is something you know, like a password. One is something you have, like your car key. One is something you are, like a fingerprint, like a facial recognition scan. And what MFA says is you have to pick any two of those three in order to get in. You can't have just one. So you give them a username and a password. That's something you know. And then it says, well, those are correct, but I want to have an extra layer of authentication. So I'm going to use a something you have type of authentication in your smartphone. And I will send a code to that. A lot of areas, it's voluntary if you want to set up MFA. And if you don't set it up on your email account, you're really leaving yourself vulnerable, because most other accounts can be reset if you respond to an email. You can log into your bank account and say, I forgot my password. And they say, well, we'll send an email to you to reset the account. Well, if a bad guy has a hold of your email account, then they can take over your bank account. So putting MFA on your email address is absolutely critical.
So one of the things that we run into, one of the things that we run into, you know, Bruce and I are baby boomers, and a lot of our clients are baby boomers, and we didn't grow up in that world of having to secure all these passwords and that kind of thing. But what we've witnessed is when people are compromised, they don't share that with other people because they're embarrassed. They're embarrassed that they haven't, they're not up on technology. And, you know, you go to your kids and they look at you like, you idiot. You know, why can't you grasp this? I mean, you know, I'm being dramatic, but yet, can you just talk about that, where, you know, we should be open with people, ask for help. You know, people have answered these emails and then they get themselves in this kind of hole, and then it's really bad, and then they hide it from their children, and they don't want anybody to know.
I couldn't agree more. I am not a millennial, so I did not grow up with this from day one, but I do hear what you're saying, that there is a stigma in society that as you get older, you tend to be less and less technologically savvy. I don't know I completely agree with that, but let's assume for the sake of argument that there are a lot of people that feel embarrassed when these kind of things happen. That is completely and totally 100% natural. And I think we need to get to a point in society where we understand that the human element is being hacked regardless of age. You know, there was a time 100 years ago when cars were just starting to get popular, and automotive safety wasn't really a thing. That if you got hurt in a car crash, well, you just don't know how to drive. Obviously, it's your fault. And then enough people went flying through windshields that the government decided that having safety glass was a good idea. And having glass that made it harder for people to get cut in an accident was smart. It wasn't all the driver's fault. Well, then the head of Volvo's wife got into a mild accident and got very badly hurt and turned to her husband and said, why can't we make this better? And now we have seatbelts, and so on and so forth. And we've moved the need from if something bad happens to you in a car, it's your fault as the driver and nothing else, to there's a partnership required. We need safe, competent drivers and safe cars and safe roads. And those three things together can help a whole lot of people not get injured in cars. Cybersecurity is exactly the same way. These systems that are being built now have varying levels of cybersecurity, and there have been a lot of very famous breaches that have happened recently that have nothing to do with the people that were taken advantage of. The Equifax breach is one of the most famous. In 2017, Equifax lost 100 million Americans' sensitive information. Allegedly, that was done by a foreign nation state. I personally believe it was, but it could have been done by a cyber criminal group just as easily. That wasn't anyone's fault that it happened to. But then when someone calls you up knowing your maiden name, your social security number, your date of birth, where you lived, well, Equifax had all that. It's not the victim's fault that these things happen. What we can do today is to educate ourselves as to how these criminals are taking advantage of us so that we can stay one step ahead of them, so that we know to hang up the phone when someone calls claiming they're from the IRS. The IRS will never call you. The IRS doesn't do that. The IRS doesn't send many emails unless you go to their website. The IRS sends letters. They like good old-fashioned letters. And for everyone listening, if you have a call that comes in claiming to be from the IRS, hang up. Go to irs.gov. There are phone numbers on that website that you can call to validate if that person was real or not. But these sorts of things, when you feel ashamed as a victim, I think that is an artifact of society, and I think it's something that we need to work to change.
I want to reintroduce our guest. If you joined us late, we're very fortunate today to have Bryce Austin with us. Bryce is an expert in cybersecurity. We're talking about tax-related cybersecurity specifically, but just security in general. He's got a best-selling book if you're interested in reading more after the show today. The book is called Secure Enough? 20 Questions on Cybersecurity for Business Owners and Executives. You can get it at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and anywhere you get your e-reading material. Bryce, we've only got about 2 minutes left before it's time for a break. And then in the second half of the show, listeners will definitely get as many of your questions in for Bryce as we can. What do you think, Bryce, are, before we go to a break in a couple of minutes, key takeaways for people listening today? What should they know? What should they do to protect themselves?
You betcha, Bruce. Regarding tax fraud, you want to register your account on IRS.gov. It's important that you go there and do it yourself so someone else doesn't do it for you. Unless you need to take out a loan soon, there are three major credit reporting agencies, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. You can freeze your credit at all three without charge. That was one of the benefits of the Equifax breach. Filing your taxes as early as you can is critically important because if you filed them, then someone else can't file them for you again. And then finally, the password reuse is a big, big issue. It's important to use a password keeper in your life so that you can have one big password to rule them all.
And I have to admit, as someone that is not technologically proficient or not technologically savvy, remembering my passwords, being able to get into something and not being able to get in is frequently frustrating to me, but I have to stop and kick myself and say, this little annoyance on my daily life is probably nothing. It's a proverbial drop in the bucket compared to having my information breached, my identity stolen, or losing money. So I just have to be less of a crybaby and be more proficient and be more diligent and not complain about it when I struggle to get in. Susie, I know we're about due for a break. We'll take our break and let listeners drive most of the show in the second half.
All right, that sounds great, Bruce. And there are a lot of questions right now. This is really a hot topic. I know people that have been victim of this, and it's just awful when you become a victim of something like this. So if you are listening right now and you have a question for Bruce, for Peg, or for Bryce, 651-461-9226. I'll say it one more time. You can call that line, too, because we'll take the question for you on the air. 651-461-9226 or 651-461-9226. Welcome back to the second half of Your Money. I'm Susie Jones, and we have got a lot of questions from our listeners. So we'll get to that after I reintroduce to you Bruce Helmer, the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group, and Peg Webb, Senior Vice President at Wealth Enhancement Group, and our special guest, Bryce Austin. And we're talking about tips for avoiding tax-related cybercrime. Welcome back to the three of you, and reminding our listeners right now, 651-461-9226 if you have a question. Bruce, Peg?
Thank you. Yep, thank you, Susie Jones. Again, Bryce Austin is with us, and if you want to check out his book, Austin is A-U-S-T-I-N. The book is called Secure Enough, 20 Questions on Cybersecurity for Business Owners and Executives, and you can get that wherever you get your e-reading material. Bryce, the first half, I think, really probably opened some people's eyes to the magnitude of this potential threat that we all face. You wanted to also share a personal experience, and then we'll definitely get listeners involved and take as many of their questions as we can. Bryce?
That sounds terrific, Bruce. Thank you. I often get asked where my interest and passion for cybersecurity comes from, and regrettably, it is because I, too, was a victim of cybercrime. It was indirect as opposed to direct, but those feelings of shame and such are no different. I was at Target Corporation in 2013 and 2014, had a great experience being part of their technology team. I was leading a number of the technology programs that would touch the stores themselves, things that would change the customer experience, like buy online at Target.com and pick up in a store. How do you do that? How do you make those systems work together? Well, that was something my team was working on, was really enjoying it. I had a 15-year career before that in the payrolls area in Wells Fargo, and before that, a company called Payday of Minnesota, and had always enjoyed technology and cybersecurity. And then Target lost 40 million credit cards in 2013. It was what looked like it could have been a billion-dollar breach to the company. I don't think it turned out being that bad, but it was very serious. How important are those new whiz-bang programs that my teams were running in the wake of that breach? Well, they weren't very important at all. So in 2014, myself and over half of my team were part of the 2,000 people laid off at Target way back when. And I will tell you, Bruce, that going from bonus checks to unemployment checks is a very humbling experience. And coming home to your wife and your 18-month-old boy, and your wife's pregnant with number two, to let them know that their dad had a resume-generating experience at work that day, it changed me. It was difficult, and I decided to do something about it. I wanted to help other people and other companies avoid what I had just gone through, and that's how TCE Strategy came about. And it's been a fabulous fit for me, and I am thrilled to say that we have helped thousands of people and hundreds of companies stay safer against these cyber criminals.
That's a great story, actually. Peg, anything else you want to ask Bryce or comment on before we let listeners drive the rest of the show?
I would love to hear the listeners' questions because I think this is a great topic.
All right, is that my cue?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Again, 651-461-9226. A texter writes, why don't banks, brokerage firms, and medical providers use signed and encrypted email, which has been available for 20 years? And I guess this might really be to Bryce. What do you or go ahead.
It's a terrific question. The texter is right that back in the 80s when email started, it was totally unencrypted. It was like sending a postcard in the mail. A lot of organizations are using those signed and encrypted emails, which truly are 100% secure. It's very hard to get into them. I think the reason that it hasn't caught on is that 90%+ of all email is currently very secure. We've added some things, not to go back to those acronyms that Bruce poked fun at very reasonably in the beginning of the show, but three technologies called SPF, DKIM, and DMARC have been added to emails almost all the time. And those areas make email much more secure. The encryption used now is something called opportunistic TLS that also helps make it more secure almost all the time. Now, that's not to take away from the texter's point that it's not 100% of the time. That TLS encryption is opportunistic, meaning if one of the email servers in question doesn't support it, then it'll run it in clear text. But all the big email providers support it. All of them do. So I think it hasn't caught on as much because it hasn't been as necessary. The other thing is that the signed and encrypted emails sound terrific, but if a bad guy has your username and password to get into your email account, then the whole thing's for naught. Mm. It's like giving someone a key to your house. You can have the best lock on planet Earth, but if you let someone borrow your car keys and there was a house key on there and they made a copy of it, well, you're done. That's it. They win. So I'm much more concerned about password reuse and multi-factor authentication than I am about the underpinnings of emails in real-world breaches.
All right. Let's jump into the next question. And this is true for a lot of people, you know, as we have an aging society. A texter writes, my 95 and 92-year-old in-laws have zero online presence, nor do they have a smartphone. Trying to help them do anything online, banking, etc., is a nightmare. And another texter writes, is it better to mail our taxes? And I think that's a legitimate thing. A lot of people don't want to do it online. It's just too uncomfortable.
They are so – boy, these are good questions, and I wish I had, you know, very specific cut-and-dry answers, and I don't. These are hard.
Yeah.
Because we're focusing on tax preparation, I want to strongly advise everyone, regardless of if you have any online presence, to register yourself at IRS.gov and figure out how to freeze your credit at those three areas we talked about earlier, Equifax, TransUnion, and Experian, because people are using those systems against you even if you don't have an online presence. Other than that, you know, it's up to the individual. If they don't mind going to the bank to deposit their checks as opposed to do it on their phone or calling in to move money around or that kind of thing, I don't see any problem with it at all. Having said that, I don't know that it's any more secure to mail in your tax return as it is to do it electronically. They both have risks. Neither one is perfect. If you're expecting a refund, I have heard that mailed-in rebates sometimes take months to even get opened by the IRS. I don't know that for certain, but I've been told it anecdotally. I think you're okay doing it electronically, in my opinion, because neither way of doing it is completely secure. So we have to pick the lesser of two evils.
651-461-9226. A texter writes, I might have missed this, but what do you recommend, Bryce, as the best password keeper?
Okay. Let me say that my company is vendor agnostic. We're happy to recommend vendors. We're happy to recommend against vendors, but I don't resell any of them so that we can give good, unfettered advice. I am a fan of Dashlane. I've had very good luck with it. I have clients using 1Password. That's the number 1 and then the word password, and they've had good luck with it. I've had folks using Bitwarden. No problems there. There's one called LastPass. They have had some issues. They've had some breaches of their own, which is surprising because a password keeper, you would think, would be among some of the most secure systems on the planet, but nothing is completely and totally 100% secure, which is a challenge. I'll say that the new ones that have come out as part of Google Chrome, so Google's built-in password keeper, and now Apple had Keychain. I think they might still be calling it Keychain, but Apple's password keeper built into the Macs and iPhones. They've come a long way. A few years ago, I wouldn't have recommended them, but the United Kingdom's version of their cybersecurity and information security awareness agency, they gave the green light to Google's password keeper. So that's one data point that they believe that is secure enough. And up until recently, there was some controversy with the iPhone's password keeper because it was built in too closely to your iCloud account. And if someone got a hold of your phone, they could take over the whole thing, and that was really bad. Apple's made a lot of changes to improve that, in part because of a physical phone theft ring here in the Twin Cities that was occurring downtown a few years ago. You can Google it. It was a very interesting story. Any of those solutions, I think, are far, far better than using the same password everywhere or derivations thereof. You know, most of my clients, when I first meet them, they start with my favorite password, 1! And then you look through their list and they've got 1 with 3! Or my favorite password, 2! Well, the bad guys know how to play that game too. You really need completely separate and distinct passwords everywhere. And the only way to do that is with a password keeper.
651-461-9226. Great information for all of us listening today, including myself. A texter writes, what does Bryce think of using pass keys rather than passwords? And maybe talk about what is a pass key versus a password.
Absolutely. We've been trying to get rid of passwords for well over 10 years. I do some professional speaking, and I have an entire deck from 2014 about how passwords are going away, and they still haven't. Pass keys are an attempt to do just that. Pass keys make a version of encryption certificates, which are a whole bunch of fancy math that make it so two people can talk to each other in a secure manner over an open line. And it's a really fancy piece of math. And people much, much smarter than I am, like Bruce Schneier, who used to be here in the Twin Cities, know a whole lot more about it than I do. But I trust that the math is sound. A pass key is an individual version of that. So instead of you having a password, you log in once with your password, and then something like Gmail will ask, would you like to switch to a pass key instead? And it will download a pass key to your device, and you can use that going forward. I've dipped my toe in the water of using pass keys. I think the math is sound. I think that they cannot easily be hacked. I think that their portability between the different devices that you have may still need some more improvement. I'm concerned that they're still relatively new. We might not want to jump on that bandwagon quite yet, but I'm not against them. I would recommend it for the more tech-savvy of the bunch. And I think 5 years from now, passkeys are going to be far, far, far more prevalent.
This is a question I have too, but it's also a text question that just came in. 651-461-9226. How do the bad guys find our password?
Okay. I have a team that specializes in dark web scans. For those of us with any gray hair at all, we probably had a Yahoo account back before Gmail was a thing. Well, in 2013, Yahoo got hacked, and all the passwords went with it. I think it was 2014, maybe 2016, LinkedIn got hacked. And those passwords were encrypted, but they were poorly encrypted. All the passwords went with that, too. So what a credential stuffing attack is when a system like ilovepuppies.com got hacked, the passwords went with it in that hack. Well, there are databases online of billions of hacked accounts, email addresses, and passwords. If you want to Google the RockYou password repository. That's one of the most famous ones. And it came from a system that used to plug in cute features to Facebook 10, 15 years ago. And they were terribly insecure. And all the passwords went not just for RockYou, but for Facebook. That was bad. If you're reusing any of those passwords or a derivation thereof today, well, those passwords are publicly available. One thing that you can do to see where your passwords may be exposed is to go to a website called haveibeenpwned.com. And Have I Been Pwned, you can type in your email address, and it will tell you if you have any breaches associated with that email address and whether or not the passwords were stolen. So that is one way that the bad guys get our passwords. Another is we pick silly passwords, passwords of password, of change me, of welcome one exclamation point, or in geek circles, welcome one bang. When my team does external penetration tests, we will do a password spraying attack. That's different than credential stuffing. Credential stuffing is someone got your passwords trying to reuse it. Password spraying is you picked a password of password or Vikings rule or, well, I'll go Packers rule, although they don't, but I'll say it anyhow. They will try those things. And if they get lucky, well, then they're in, unless you have multi-factor authentication. Matter of fact, we just finished up an external scan a couple of weeks ago for a company over $1 billion in revenue, and we popped two accounts with the equivalent of if the company was like Brim Coffee, because they're gone. Someone had a password of Brim123Bank on their account. Well, that was really, really bad idea. But I'm happy to say that my team found it before a cyber criminal did, so we were able to get it fixed. So they get your password any number of ways. It's a great question.
651-461-9226. I think this is another really good one for people listening, is that if you get that email from maybe Medicare, or I got one the other day from PayPal that had said I had a $480 fraud on my thing. Well, I don't have PayPal, so I asked the guys in the newsroom, I'm like, should I do something with it? And they're all like, delete, delete, delete. But if there is that, and if you're caught off guard and you're emotional and you think, oh my God, did I really charge something on PayPal that I didn't know? They really can hook you in emotionally and freak you out and get scared, and then you end up doing dumb things. I mean, kind of walk us through that when you see something on your email that you click into accidentally.
I think you just queued that up better than I ever could have, Susie.
So good job, Susie.
Millions and millions of years ago, mammals had two reactions, fight or flight. And when you got nervous, that's what you did. You either ran and hid, or you tore into something hoping that you were bigger than it. Well, that part of our brain is still very much alive and well. And what the bad guys want to do is to scare you into making a snap decision without a lot of information, where you don't have a chance to step down, to take a step back and think about it. Any email that says you owe money and you weren't recognized, and you didn't recognize it, or you've been victim to a fraud and you aren't part of the institution that is claiming that you were a victim of fraud, simply delete it. Here's where I'm going with this. If it was real and you really do owe money, they will contact you again. People that you honestly owe money to tend to be pretty persistent. Generally speaking, cyber criminals aren't. Now, if a cyber criminal has something after you specifically, that's a different level of threat. But 99% of the time, cyber criminals aren't after you. They're after money. Mm-hmm. And if you're an easy target, well, they're happy to go after you. So if you see something that is fraud related, or you owe money, or you have a bill, it's becoming prevalent. I am on PayPal, and at least once a month, I get a fake PayPal invoice for an iPhone or for a laptop or for some subscriptions or concert tickets. They're all fake. Mm-hmm. It's someone that set up a PayPal account and is using it to try to grift people out of money until PayPal gets enough complaints about it and shuts their account down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay to delete. Delete first, wait for a second or third email about the same thing before you take it seriously.
And again, 651-461-9226. The questions are coming in fast and furious. This is something that a lot of people have, where someone, a texter writes, we are getting calls pretending to be Medicare or the IRS, and to your fight or flight. I've had people in my life that I love that have said, oh, I got to go to Western Union and mail $8,000 to something to make sure everything's correct. I'm like, wait, don't mail any, you know, it's real. I mean, these, because people are, like you said, fight or flight, man. They go get money and they want to solve the problem. And I wonder about that. Cash, you know, you get cash for, you don't get cash and hand it to somebody at a gas station. That's not through the proper channels, right?
This feels different when there are a number of derivations of this. One of the more common ones is someone gets a new job. They put that new job up on LinkedIn. A bad guy sees the new job. They, because of other breaches, know who the CEO of the company is and that CEO's mobile phone number. They will then send a fraudulent text to the mobile phone of the person that just got the new job saying, hello, my name's CEO. I have a big sales meeting going in. I need 10 $500 gift cards to Apple or what have you as giveaways that I don't have time. Can you please get them? Let me know when you've got them. Thanks so much. Use your company card.
Wow.
And then the victim doesn't pick up the phone and call the CEO or their boss or, you know, whomever and validates this. So they buy them. And I want to give a prop because I had this happen to an admin at a client of mine a couple of years ago, and she went into Best Buy and said, you know, they were happened to be $200 gift cards, but same story. And Best Buy said, this is too fishy. We don't like this. We think that you're being taken advantage of. You need to get more information. We won't sell you these cards. Kudos to Best Buy for doing that.
Right.
Wow.
But they went down the street to another major retailer, and they were happy to sell it to them. So I'll leave that one nameless. But as soon as you have the cards and you text the person on the other line, then they say, okay, I don't have time to get them. Can you just scratch off the numbers on the back and take a picture and send them to me? And then the bad guy instantly drains those gift cards. That's a common one. I have had my own mother get a call from your computer company, so I'll call it Dell or Microsoft or HP, saying, we've detected a problem with your computer. We need to help you with this. Can you please go to either log me in 123 or go to my PC or TeamViewer? There are lots of these remote control applications that let you take control of someone else's machine, and they'll walk you through how to hook the computers together so they can infect your computer with a virus. Or look at your bank account information or something else that isn't going to work well for you. That's common as well.
All right.
If someone calls you with an urgent issue, hang up. If it's that urgent, they'll call again.
Very good. Bruce, Peg, we have a little less than a minute left, but boy, I bet we could take 3 hours with this guy. You're good, Bryce.
You're very kind.
Well, I mean, I think it's so real, you guys, and so costly and devastating for so many people. About 20 seconds left. Bruce, you just guys want to say goodbye?
Goodbye. Yeah. Thank you, Bryce.
Thank you, Bryce.
Coming on.
Awesome, Bruce. Bryce. Yeah. Yes, and you can call Wealth Enhancement at 1-888-86-ADVICE.